Hello, and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you aren't already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. We're joining you guys today, the day after the Suns' easy victory over the New York Knicks yesterday after Devin Booker went off for a season-high 41 points, first time score over 40 points in about 13 months in a game. So, Brendan, we're going to talk more about the streak, though, that the Suns are on right now. They're 4-1 in their past five games. We're going to go dive deep into numbers here with the team overall and also with some players as well, their improvements or their lack thereof improvements. But 4-1, Brendan, over the last five games. Before we get into the numbers here, we'll start with the team first. Do you think this turnaround is legit?
I think it looks like similar to what we saw in December. I would say two things to me, not even statistically really, because I think the one thing we should just acknowledge, we're looking at five games, so small sample size, of course, and some of this individual numbers that we're going to talk about might not hold up over the course of the rest of the season, but altogether, I think this looks like what we saw in December when we thought this team was coming together and going to go on a run, or at the very least just kind of change their fortune. That obviously didn't happen. So that holds me back from necessarily saying, like, here we are, it's going to happen now. But altogether, I would say two things to me from a player standpoint stand out to me that maybe this is a little bit even more legit than what we saw in December when they won four straight and five out of six, which, you know, maybe we get to that same number in Portland on Saturday. But the two things are Ayton, I think, playing more forcefully, more engaged, and more impactful on both sides of the ball, being the kind of player that I think even the biggest optimists were expecting around the time of the draft. And really, even you look at the Washington game or the Orlando game in December, I think this stretch of play from him has been even better than that, especially this home stand. And the other guy is Tyler Johnson. I think his impact, his just presence as another guy, we talked about it a lot last night, somebody who can make the right decision, at least be some semblance of a playmaker, even if we agree they might upgrade at that point guard spot this summer again, he's so much better than what they had even in December when they were kind of rolling.
Yeah, even with games coming up on the road against Portland and Golden State, I think those, obviously, I don't think they're going to be wins, but I just want to see competitiveness this time around. I think that the last time with the streak that we saw and they went back home, they got just blown out game after game, and then kind of that morale sunk away. I want to see them kind of be competitive in these games and try to avoid that, because I have a fear that if they do get blown out consecutive games like that and Golden State and Portland, it could get on the same spiral. But it seems like it's actually different this time, because they have a Tyler Johnson on their team. They have a Kelly Oubre on their team. He was on the team last time, but he was about 10 days on the team at that point. So it seems like this could be a new turning point for the Suns. But let's go into the team stats here, Brendan, in our first segment here. And I'm looking at their offense and defense ratings right now. And the Suns, surprisingly enough, they rank 10th in offensive rating with 112.4 points per 100 possessions. Their defensive rating ranks 8th with 108.3 points allowed per 100 possessions. And the overall net rating is plus 4.1, which is you have about four extra points per 100 possessions than your opposing team. So when you're ranking top 10 in defense, top 10 in offense, and top 10 in efficiency, Brent, it's really hard to lose games at that point.
That's exactly right. The numbers I had were a little different because I used cleaning the glass, which is funny because the difference there, as we talked about plenty of times, is just that the cleaning the glass numbers weed out garbage time, and usually that benefits the Suns because they get blown out a lot and their numbers look a little better on cleaning the glass. In this case, it's the opposite, actually. So that's kind of funny. Not really any time during the podcast since we started doing it where the Suns were hurt by taking garbage time out. So that's kind of interesting. But anyway, they've been great on both sides of the ball, and I think that's one of the big stories here. I looked the pace, they're averaging about two extra possessions per game during this stretch, which I think is kind of negligible, not really a humongous difference. But I think overall, just the way that they're turning defense into offense has been one of the big stories. We talked about it last night, getting into double digits and steals, but also playing, still continuing to grow and mature as a sound defense rather than just, I think one of the things even in that December stretch that we saw was, sure, they're getting, you know, turnovers or creating turnovers, but I think it felt a little bit emptier because you could tell they were really just running around kind of like chickens with their heads off. This has felt more disciplined with DeAndre Ayton, of course, defending on the perimeter a little bit more and just kind of locking down as a team. Igor and Ayton, I think, both agreed. Kellen Olson asked them both on Monday if that Milwaukee game was the best defensive performance they've put together. They both kind of agreed, and I think I would too. So the other thing to mention there with the defense was is that they are first, according to Cleaning the Glass, in defensive turnover percentage. They're forcing turnovers on over 17% of opponent possessions. So that's pretty incredible to see, and I think that's been a big key.
It's really interesting just to see the defensive numbers, and you look at them, they're number one in steals per game over the stretch. They're top five in blocks per game with six. It seems like the activity on the defensive end, like you mentioned, it seems like it's more structured this time around, and it seems like maybe the concepts, I mean, it's hard to say because we're not in the meeting rooms and all that stuff and practices for maybe the last 10 or so minutes, but it seems like the structure that Igor and the guys are putting together on the coaching staff, it seems to be clicking with the players, at least right now.
Yeah, it is. I think that's definitely true. I think Oubre coming into his own is a big part of that, and I'm sure I know I want to talk about him here as a player to really kind of think about this stretch and how it could continue. But him buying in and really settling into that kind of weak side stopper in a way has been huge for the Suns. Him kind of settling down and playing more within himself, I think, has been huge. And him getting into the starting lineup is another big difference between what's happening now and what was going on in December. As you mentioned, he basically flew to meet the team during that stretch. They had already won a couple games before the trade. They beat Minnesota and Dallas at home. He met them for the road trip that they took when they won 3 of 5 and kind of wasn't able to really get integrated. His impact was there right away, but I think this version of Oubre has been a lot better.
Yeah, Oubre's been one of the more interesting players on this team, and from a numbers standpoint, he's really stood out over this 5-game stretch and really since he's been a Sun. And we'll definitely have him in the next segment here, but any other team-based stats you want to hit on, Brian, before we go on to our more player-related stuff?
Yeah, the only last thing to mention here on this in this segment about the team would just be that I think the offensive stat that jumped out to me, people talk about the four factors on either end, Cleaning the Glass. Cleaning the Glass has those listed and ranked out by team across the whole league. The Suns are second over this 5-game stretch in terms of free throw rate. So they're getting to the line on 28.2% or 28.2% of their total shot attempts are free throws. So that's pretty incredible to see, especially for a team that individually, almost everybody up and down the roster, I think we've criticized at one point or another for not being aggressive enough, for not getting to the basket enough, for not obviously drawing fouls as a result of that aggressiveness inside. So to see that, I think, is another key and something that even more so maybe than December, I'm not going to pretend that I remember what the free throw rate was over those 6 games in December by any means, but to me, that is a number that does feel a little bit more sustainable, kind of backed up by the eye test as well. Just that aggressiveness, getting out in transition and turning defense into offense. I think those free throws are coming as a result of all of that, and it's been pretty obvious to see.
Yeah, on NBAstats.com, they actually rank over this 5-game stretch tie for first in free throws per game. So that really does speak to how much they got into the line. And you look at Devin Booker, he's shooting 97.5% at the free throw line right now, getting to their 7.8 times per game. Uber is getting there 5.5 times per game. And DeAndre, and with help of that 14 free throw attempt night a couple nights ago, he's at 4.8 over this 5-game stretch. Before we go on to our next segment here, guys, talking about guys like Booker, Oubre, Ayton, and others, I want to tell you really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter page. If you're not already doing so, go ahead and follow at Locked On NBA now on Twitter. I think it's one of the more valuable resources on there. Brian has accounts are synced on there for your Phoenix coverage you guys love hearing Locked On Suns, but you might be missing out on a lot of voices out there on the Locked On Network that are really good at their jobs, that are really doing an awesome work here on Locked On Network, like David Locke in Utah, John Krause in Boston, Adam Mares in Denver, just to name a few, because we have all 30 teams covered for you guys. Most of them are credentialed as well. So if you're not already doing so, go ahead and follow at Locked On NBA and then on Twitter.
I want to also tell you guys about Homey. I'm sure you are familiar with them. I know we've seen even more billboards going up around town, and I know a lot of people are kind of buying in and starting to hear good feedback around Twitter and everywhere that people are just as excited as we are about Homey, and for good reason. They really have a model that I think works. They save you a ton of money. They have a team that backs you up and supports you with what can be sometimes a pretty confusing process, and they really focus on that connection and that help. And I think that's what's really the most important thing when you're buying a house, which is just something that it's a huge decision, but it's just something maybe you do it one, two, three times in your life. And it's not something everybody has the expertise in. And that's really what Homey does. They sell your house, you sell your home for a flat rate of just $1,500, cutting out on average over $10,000 in fees and commissions that normally go into buying or selling. And they help you qualify for a buyer refund on the back end of about $5,000. And I think that encapsulates just how much money you have the opportunity to sell, to save, and a team that's going to help you do all of that. So if you want to learn more about my friends at Homey, text Homey, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Again, that's Homey. Text Homey, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. All righty. I want to start with Devin Booker, and maybe we can even do this whole segment on him and then maybe do a little bit of rapid fire on the other few guys later on. We'll kind of see how things go. But I think there's a lot to dive into here. And what you said right before we went to that break was, I think, exactly what I wanted to start with. 97% from the free throw line. That's pretty incredible. I had no idea, to be honest.
Yeah, he's really getting to the line at not Harden rates, because Harden is another animal at this point with how he is offensively, but getting to the line almost eight times per game. That's top six, I believe, between anyone over the past five games. I think Luka's up there. Trae Young is up there. Also, a guy like James Harden is up there too. But pretty elite company for Devin Booker to be in. He's also hitting all those shots. And if he's getting to the line at that point, we've hit on the podcast multiple times this season that he's told us he's made an emphasis on doing it this year. He's going to be adding, Brent, easily four or five extra points per game if he's hitting free throws and getting to the line at this rate.
Exactly. I mean, and I think he's probably been the guy more than anyone else who would have told you that all season. That's been probably the single most focus of his entire season, is learning how to get to the line, learning the little tricks and ways to use his body to do that more effectively and more consistently, like the best scorers in the entire league always do and always have done in the NBA. And so he's been super open about that, and I think we're really starting to see it materialize. The other thing that stood out to me, looking through his numbers a little bit more, was three-pointers made, so 12 over this five-game stretch, which is kind of seems low, but I guess okay. But 10 of them have been assisted, and that's really exciting, I think. That shows the impact of Tyler Johnson. That shows the impact, really, of a starting unit and a rotation of eight or nine guys at this point that are really moving the ball incredibly well. So we've talked all year about the discrepancy between how much he's forced to take threes off the bounce and really not great at that yet consistently. But when he's able to get those on the catch, he's pretty unstoppable. Last night was the best example, of course, making six of them. Just showed really what he can do when he has space around him to take those shots, get him from the corner, get him from easier spots, rather than just launching from the top of the key, which there's only a few guys in the league that can make that consistently. And Harden's one of them, which is, again, why he's sort of a freak and not even worth comparing. But those threes getting open and making them has been huge.
Looking at his overall three-point numbers, Booker, he's attempting a pretty good amount of threes per game, not as much as I want him to right now. He's at 6.6 and shooting at 36.4% clip. But the exciting numbers here, Brian, I was looking those up as you were talking. His catch and shoot over the past five games, 8 for 16, 50%.
Yeah, there you go. And that's
an elite shooter right there.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly, I think, what the dream was when you finally bring in Tyler Johnson. And I think we should also mention, like, kind of the frustration, just if you're Booker, that must be there to be like, why do we wait 60 games, guys? Like, why could we not have a guy in here to set me up sooner? But, you know, maybe we'll look back on this season as kind of a tale of two halves, and one was showing what Booker could be as a playmaker. One of them was kind of unleashing him even more as somebody who's kind of doing a lot on and off the ball. His usage is still at 30.7%, so it's not as if he's not taking shots or getting the ball in his hands. It's just diversifying the way that that's happening and how much more efficient he's been able to be. As a result, his true shooting percentage is 61.4, which is super elite. Anything over 60 is awesome. He's even higher than that, and plus 10.4 net rating. So his impact is right there. And I tweeted, I think on Saturday, you know, this probably kind of sarcastic, like, I think this is a pretty good argument on the Booker can be a winning player debate. And I think we're right back there two wins later. Like, this guy is the biggest key, the biggest driving factor of us, the best stretch of the season, or one of the best stretches of the season for this team. And it's pretty inarguable when you see just how big the numbers are of how much he's impacting on a nightly basis.
Now, it's nice to see Booker not really have the ball in his hands as much, because, like, you see these numbers here with the catch and shoot. Even since the Tyler Johnson trade expanding out more, he's shooting 48.5% on catch and shoot threes over the past 10 games, which is some really good numbers there. But looking at his assist numbers really quick, Brandon, they're down slightly. They've been around 7 all year. This time it's 6.2 over 5 games. But you see the other guys with the assist numbers here. Mikal Bridges with 3.2, Tyler Johnson with 4.4. Just how nice is it for Devin Booker to have guys like Johnson and Bridges, two not only high IQ guys, as you can tell by the assist turnover numbers, but guys who get the system and are guys who are able to get in the ball pretty easily.
I think that's been huge. Bridges is another good guy to bring up. I was at a loss for, I was like, I know there's someone else that's been a key as a playmaker, especially with Jackson kind of not being that lately. So it's definitely Bridges off the bench. I talked to him a little bit about that on Tuesday, and he was saying, you know, it's fun. It's a challenge for him. You know, we saw him do it a little bit in Villanova. He hasn't really had that opportunity. We've kind of noticed it, but even more lately. So that'll be another thing to watch. If he can get to another level as a playmaker and really start to catch on to what Igor wants to do, that's just another guy that's playing heavy minutes who's going to be a positive in that regard. But 31 assists for Booker, like you said, a little bit down. And I think the one knock on him right now during this stretch would be 23 turnovers. Not a great assist to turnover ratio by any means. I think it was like 1.4 or something like that. Just still want that to get a little better. But I think all things considered, even a lot of the best scorers in the league tend to turn the ball over. So ideally that gets cut down, but maybe that's still a little while away as he gets even more comfortable playmaking. The thing that I want to mention lastly when it comes to passing is Johnson. Not just Johnson to Booker passes, which is what we've mostly focused on, but the other way around. So NBA.com has tracking stats for passing. So Booker's receiving 20 passes per game from Johnson, and that's good for one assist per game. Pretty solid. But on the other side, even more efficient, if you think of it, I don't even know if efficient is the right word, but only 11.6 passes from Booker to Johnson per game, but 1.4 assists. So those guys are finding each other in good spots to be making plays, finishing plays, scoring the ball. And I think that those numbers really back up what we're seeing. Those guys are making an effort to find one another and really growing their chemistry quickly.
Now I'll leave this up to you here for the structure, but I was thinking for these final 2 segments, we could do 2 players each semi here. I was going to think we maybe do Kelly Oubre here, but I'll leave it up to you as far as you want to hone in on Oubre here for a couple minutes, or do you want to maybe save Oubre here for the next segment?
Who else do you want to do? We have Oubre. Ayton, was there another guy?
Yeah, I was thinking just maybe it's Tyler Johnson, just because he's maybe snapping out of a slump a little bit. What do you think?
Why don't we do Johnson now then, since we talked about him and Booker gelling?
Yeah, why not? Well, that's a really good segue. That kind of made it itself there. So we'll do Tyler Johnson here really quickly for you guys. And looking at his numbers here, he's shooting 42.2% from the field, averaging 10.8 points per game, shooting 33.3% from three, 4.4 assists to only 0.8 turnovers. His assist turnover ratio is plus 4.4 since he's been a member of the Phoenix Suns, which is, I believe, number 3 overall in the NBA over that stretch. And also his defense, even though it's not really showing in the numbers right now, 1.2 steals, 0.4 blocks. He's been one of the more valuable Suns defensively, and also his plus minus tells a story as well, Brent. So what's been your thoughts on Tyler Johnson the past five or so games? Because over this five-game stretch, it seems like he's really made up for that poor four or five-game stretch to start things out here in Phoenix.
Yeah, he's a smart player. I think that's really what stuck out to me. The Lakers game, for him to have four steals in that game is pretty impressive, just because that lineup, those the way that the Lakers are trying to play right now, super small, super long, is usually, I think, would be a recipe for a struggle from Johnson, just because he's not as big as those guys. You know, he's 6'2 or whatever and not a long athletic guy, but four steals in that game, just knows where to be, reads the game on both ends really well. And I think that cerebral nature makes him a better point guard, a better lead playmaker than I was expecting even. And I think I was even a little more optimistic than most people about that. And I've even been impressed. He surpassed my expectations and making a lot of kind of key plays, not afraid to get the ball and try to score in the fourth quarter. We've seen him do that in all three games this year, or this stretch against Milwaukee, Los Angeles, and the Knicks. The past three wins, he's scored a couple key buckets in all of those fourth quarters. And I think it's just those little things that I've been the most impressed with. And then off the court too, he's just such a calm, collected guy. I don't know if fans have really been able to get that, just because he's not in the videos and doing the media stuff as much as somebody like Booker or Ayton is. But has he impressed you with just how patient and kind of relaxed he is as a leader? Because I think that's really one of the things this team needed, was a guy on the court who can make the plays, but also off the court, just kind of lead by example and have that collected, cool mindset.
I know this might be easy to say, but I feel like just him being in that culture of Miami for a couple of years and him and trying to bring those habits over to Phoenix, I know it's a small window, about a month or so, but it seems like those habits might be starting to form. I mean, he's more of a vocal leader on the practice court. I know he's a quiet leader. Igor says a quiet leader, but it seems like he's leading really good by example. The guys seem to be following along there. And when you're in a winning system like Miami and under Spoelstra and Pat Riley for those guys for 3 to 4 years, I mean, you have to come to a situation. If you see just how bad it is in the opposite end of it with Phoenix, I mean, you have a chance to improve that. It seems like he's really stepping up in that kind of role.
Yeah, I think Jamal Crawford, he was super excited about it. Maybe we should have just trusted him. He's a guy who obviously has connections around the league. Really seemed to be positive, like super certain that Johnson was going to end up being a real good leader off the court for this team, and he has been. And Crawford was completely right there. And I think Miami clearly, you know, should get some credit for building up their guys that way. And not only just the culture there in general, but the fact that even though they were a better team than the Suns, Johnson got to be around a lot of young players, Justice Winslow, you know, Bam Adebayo. They have a ton of young guys on that roster. So he was already a little bit of a veteran for those players even before coming over here. He talked about how weird it was to be one of the older guys on a team, but even in Miami, I would imagine that stuff was happening for him and kind of getting comfortable in that role. And we've definitely seen it click here in Phoenix, taking on that veteran role, even at what he's only like 25, but it's shown up in a big way.
Yeah, even more of a long-term picture to close things out on Johnson, unless you want to add anything else, Brandon, just when you see the difference that's made with especially the guy Devin Booker, and you see even DeAndre Ayton and Kelly Oubre, other guys, Mikal Bridges too, step up in the improved play with Tyler Johnson being brought aboard, especially his chemistry improving over the past five or so games. Just how big does this speak to if the Suns can acquire an above average to an all-star level point guard like a Drew Holiday or a Mike Conley, for example? There's other options as well out there on the market, we imagine, this summer. Just how big could that be if that move could really get that final puzzle piece, so to say, in here and maybe get things accelerated as far as that goes?
Yeah, I think it's two things. It's the fact that you're already seeing it. It wasn't like we really had to guess. It felt pretty obvious that the Suns needed a point guard, but to have a guy, a capable player, an efficient player come in and have that effect, I think you have to feel good about the rest of the team. All those guys you just mentioned actually clicking, actually getting better, at least in part as a result of Johnson coming in and playing his game and doing well. You feel like, okay, the rest of the team is going to benefit that greatly from having a guy like that around. So if you get somebody even better than Johnson, obviously you'd hope the results would be even better as a team. The other thing is Johnson if you do and eventually keep him around next season, we don't know what's going to happen there. But if you do, now you have that guy as your backup. Like, you're really starting to talk about a rotation at guard that is miles and miles better than what they entered this season with. De'Anthony Melton, Tyler Johnson, a veteran, even if it's somebody like Ricky Rubio and Booker, like that's a winning group. And so Johnson, even if he's just a smaller piece next season, you have to feel really good about what he's done.
Yeah, if it's in a, as a trade chip or even as a piece next year, he's definitely proving his worth. But before we go on to Kelly Oubre and then DeAndre Ayton, did you want to give us a little sneak peek as far as our lock and network, Brennan?
Yeah, definitely continue to check that out, guys. I think the shows are just getting better and better as the season goes along and going to be a must listen when it comes to being playoff time. We have a lot of hosts Monday through Friday that are the Locked On local hosts for playoff teams. We have the Nuggets host. We have the Celtics host, Jazz, all these guys that are very familiar with the teams that are going to be playing on a nightly basis in the playoffs. So if you haven't already, go subscribe to Locked On NBA. Make that a part of your daily diet, little bite-sized episodes, just like you love here on Locked On Suns, but more of a national perspective, especially after the Sun season is over. You want to keep up with basketball still. We're going to be hitting the offseason, but you got to keep up with all the games going on. So Locked On NBA is definitely the best place to do that. All right, let's start here with Oubre. I think the guy who Suns fans have taken to the most here, not just in these five games, but since he was acquired 2.5 months ago, and his play very infectious. I think I feel like we're talking about him pretty much every day now, but 18.8 points and 7 rebounds per game over this stretch, 1.8 steals and 1 block. Just that all around box score impact has been huge. The Suns needed a lot. We talked about not only do they need a 1, they need a 4, they need defense, they need offense, and he's really plugged as many holes as you possibly could have expected. He's been excellent on both sides.
Absolutely. I just wanted to go into some numbers really quick because I'm working on an Oubre story myself that'll be going up today or tomorrow. And his play alongside Booker and Ayton is kind of making himself an easy question or an easy answer as far as the question of paying him or not. Because when you see the numbers here, he's a minus 2.1 net rating with Devin Booker this season in 542 minutes, which is ahead of Mikal Bridges, Josh Jacks, and PJ Warren in that order, the best out of all the four wings. Plus minus 1.8 net rating with DeAndre Ayton on the court, 463 minutes, which is the best of anyone on the team. And when you combine Booker and Ayton on the court alongside Oubre, they have a plus 5.0 net rating and 325 minutes, which is not only the best on the team, but the only positive net rating of anyone with Booker and Ayton on the team. And then when you add in, for fun here, Mikal Bridges for a four-man lineup, which I want to see more of, by the way. I hope we see more at the end as the season wanes on, but a plus 0.5 net rating, 145 minutes between Booker, Ayton, Bridges, and Oubre. So it kind of just speaks to the all-around impact that Oubre is making. And at this point, when you see the box score numbers too, them putting up at least 16 points, 1 block, and 1 steal per game, Robert Covington's the only wing that's done that over the past 2.5 months. But then when you also look at that, he's only played 7 games over that stretch. So really, Kelly Oubre is outperforming him, his worth right now as far as the wing position goes. And he's making himself a lot of money in the process, to be honest.
Yeah, and incredibly efficient scoring the ball, too. The one thing I wanted to hit on, 25.3 usage. Has the confidence and has earned the trust from Booker, I think, as a secondary scorer, really filled that role with TJ Warren out of the lineup and DeAndre Ayton having defense be more of a focus and not always, you know, as everybody knows, being super aggressive with the ball in his hands. Oubre's been the secondary scorer for this team, taking shots, you know, off the bounce, has the green light pretty much. Maybe he doesn't have it, but he thinks he has it at all times and making a lot. 66% in the restricted area. Just super fun player to watch and really growing right before our eyes. I mean, it would be interesting, maybe something we can do over the offseason as we get closer to seeing what the Suns do as far as paying him, is bring somebody that covered the Wizards on to just talk about, is this a, like, was this ever even in the cards? It seems like this breakout really kind of came out of nowhere. This was like the 7th, 8th man on that, on those Wizards teams, and suddenly here he is, the second best player on a, you know, maybe winning team is a little getting ahead of ourselves here, but an improving team and a team that is kind of materializing around his style. And so that's been awesome. Do you feel like, has the number for you that's kind of your baseline if you're James Jones and the Suns? Has that gone up for you as a result of this stretch and seeing what he's done the past 2.5 months in purple and orange?
I really think it has, and especially if we talked about in last night's episode, if Phoenix is noticing this, everyone around the league is noticing how good Uber's playing the past week plus. And
what's the number?
I think his market right now, the preferred one that I would do is 13.5. I feel like that's just the most realistic when you try to bend between what he can get on the open market and what the Suns can get him back for, just as far as hometown discount goes. So like a 4 years, $54 million. But I think the range for me, if it's not 13.5, just going on a range here, 13 to 16 million per year.
So you wouldn't go over 16?
I think 16 is my limit.
Yeah. It makes you think how insane that Otto Porter contract is, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's just...
That guy got maxed out, and I think Oubre might be better than him.
That's actually a really good question you could ask Wizards Twitter. And
yeah, Oubre might get half of what he made and be a better player. I mean, he's not as good of a shooter, but other than that, you could make the argument his playmaking and his defense might even be a little better. But yeah, that maybe we really should have a Wizards guy come on then talk about Oubre. But is there anything else you want to hit on with Tsunami Poppy, or do you want to move on to Ayton?
Yeah, really quickly, just one more thing on Oubre, because I found this interesting than the numbers I was searching up here on Oubre today. And since TJ Warren's been out with his injury, this isn't over the last 5 games, it's more over the last 17, 18 games that TJ Warren's missed his ankle injury. But over that stretch, Kelly Oubre's averaging 18 points, 4 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 1.2 steals, and 0.7 blocks. Or no, excuse me, that's TJ Warren's numbers. Since Warren's been out, Kelly Oubre's averaging 17.8 points, 5.6 rebounds, 2.1 assists, 1.7 steals, and 1 block per game, while shooting 27% from three. And then the numbers I just listed there was TJ Warren's stats with 18 points, 4 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 1.2 steals, 0.7 blocks, while shooting 42.8% from three. That's his overall season numbers. And they're playing around the same amount of minutes over that stretch and taking almost the exact same number of shots over that stretch. So the big difference between Warren and Oubre is definitely the shooting numbers there, Bryn, and also the defensive impact. So it just seems like long-term, I feel like you can only keep one of these two guys around. Do you feel like around Booker and Ayton, do you value perimeter shooting more or defense more? Because for me, I feel like, especially when you see these numbers up close now since Warren's been out and how Oubre's producing in those minutes, it seems like Oubre's kind of taking Warren's role running with it at this point.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about it in that way, but I agree with you. I think that the other thing to mention with those shooting numbers to me that makes Oubre even a little bit more valuable, I guess you could say, is if Oubre was taking only the shots that Warren was taking, I mean, he was, you know, TJ was taking contested threes. I'm not going to pretend like everything he had was 6 feet of space around him, but if he was just taking those easy spot up shots that TJ was feasting on early in the season, I think Oubre's numbers would look a lot better. He's been taking them off the bounce, taking them in transition, taking them off the move, taking them with guys, you know, in his face. I feel like they've even sometimes been a little deeper than what Warren was doing, really toeing the line and getting comfortable with that shot. So if Oubre is, you know, you think about, again, if there's a better point guard here next season, Ayton's a little better. Maybe there's a better four and Oubre is playing more at the three, maybe even just Bridges getting a little better. This, the talent upgrade going into next season, I think we could see Oubre even get a little more comfortable, get a little more efficient and have his numbers look even better compared to TJ. To me, I think it's pretty clear at this point, the two-way impact and even the more versatility on either end. I think Oubre is the clear answer. I think you actually could keep both guys, especially if you clear out Josh Jackson and get a little more creative. But altogether, if you are picking one, if I had to, gun to my head, I would say Oubre.
Yeah, really quickly, just another number on Oubre here. He's shooting 56.3% on two-point percentage shots over the past 5 games and 29.2% from three over the past 5 games. So you can tell how good he is from inside the arc there. But let's move on to DeAndre Ayton here, Brennan. And he's been an interesting stat to watch so far really over the past 5 games because he's only attempting 10 shots per game. But his impact as far as defensively, I mean, there's some serious strides, I think, being made over the past 2 or 3 games. And I think that confidence boost that he got from guarding LeBron James and Giannis doing successfully in back-to-back games, that might be something that withholds for the rest of the season, to be honest.
Hopefully. Yesterday against the Knicks wasn't as impactful just because he got into foul trouble. So that'll be something to watch is, you know, when adversity, even if it's just something simple like fouls, is that going to hold up? Is he going to continue to fight and be aggressive? We've seen at various points in the season little things kind of get to him. That Kings game with Willie Cauley-Stein or Jarrett Allen, different matchups. And he, when he goes back to playing more of a traditional style, especially on defense, if that motivation and aggressiveness continues. But I think you have to feel really good about not just those two games, but this whole stretch. His numbers, like you said, haven't been just astronomically higher or anything, but altogether, I just feel like it's been a different guy we've seen out there. And I related it. I wrote about his breakout a little bit from the you know, reporting perspective. Didn't really go too deep into the numbers at Brightside today, but just the trust, the effort, the energy that we really didn't see even consistently in college, I think has been there more consistently. I felt like I really watched Jaden pretty close last year because we knew the Suns would be close to the number one pick and all of his games are on TV here. And two seasons now, I think these five games might be the five-game stretch we've seen the most consistent effort from Ayton. Do you feel the same?
Absolutely. His defense, his activity on both ends has really been nice to see. And even though he's only 4.9 for the stretch, he's getting almost 3 offensive rebounds per game. And that's really good to see, 9.2 rebounds as well. He's, even though he's playing a few less minutes per game, he's attacking the glass at his normal rate. He's being a lot more active defensively too with his hands. Really, the only thing that's that could be seen as a negative is his shot attempts, and that's not something that you can really control. And it's really not a big issue right now, especially when the team is winning for the past 5 games. But Ayton in his role, I think he's excelling in it right now. 17 points, 9.2 rebounds. If this defense can hold Brennan the last 15 or so games, that's a huge positive step forward that I think you could take in the next season, and you can really build off with Ayton and a full offseason to work with him.
Yeah, for sure. I think people, if anyone listened to the Zach Lowe pod with Kevin Arnovitz, they really went deep on the piece that Arnovitz wrote that we talked about a little bit, I think, on our Tuesday episode. But they hit on Ayton a little bit. They both were in agreement that he has had, by all accounts, a very exciting and optimistic rookie season. And I think you and I would agree that we were a little lower, as everyone knows. And I think I've been very pleasantly surprised by him. Two other negatives, though, just to kind of put into perspective that he still, you know, hasn't had that statistical impact quite yet. It's really been more of the mentality thing. But teams are shooting, again, very low, small sample size, especially for a stat that can be as dicey as this one. But for big men, it's a little more trustworthy. Team shooting 66% against him at the rim. That's basically exactly close to what they've been doing all season. And worse than when it's against him, it's worse than the team average. We know guys like Rashawn Holmes or Dragan Bender or whoever at the rim. So he's been a little worse than those guys over the course of the season and this stretch. And then mid-range shooting, 6 of 17. We saw him, especially against Brook Lopez, he was going to that shot still a little more than I think he should be. And not really, the numbers don't really back it up. If you're making that shot at like a 40-45% clip, like LaMarcus Aldridge or somebody like that, big man taking a mid-ranger is not really a big deal. It's actually a pretty good shot, but 35% is not quite where you want it to be. So that's one thing to watch, but still a 66% true shooting, because he's just still, I think he's at 77% from the restricted area over this stretch, just a monster inside. That's been the case from day one, from preseason on. He's just been one of the better finishers in the league. And 8.4, again, back to those passing stats, 8.4 passes from Booker per game, good for 1.4 assists from Booker per game. That chemistry is something that I'm really going to watch going forward, because those guys, having Johnson and Oubre and all those guys, like we've been talking about, that impact of the ball moving a little better has opened up the floor for them to get to a pick and roll way more comfortably. We saw that with Ayton's finish through Giannis Antetokounmpo in that Saturday game to close the scoring, put them up 2. They were tied at 103, finishes through Giannis, flexes for the crowd, and everybody kind of went crazy. And it was off of a pretty easy little drop pass from Booker that we really haven't gotten to see much, because those guys have been so frustrated turning the ball over, losing the ball, and you know, just disappointing on both ends. This stretch, playing really well, and that chemistry is coming together.
Absolutely. It's really fun to see the chemistry with not only Booker and Ayton, but also Johnson and Ayton, those two guys. And also Bridges has really been helping out too, as well with the passing when he's hitting some quick reads. But DeAndre Ayton, I'm glad you brought the pick and rolls really quickly, because How are you enjoying that? Because we're really seeing more exploration of the pick and roll with Aiden more recently, and it's really exciting to see because I think he'd be one of the best finishers in pick and roll in the NBA and pretty short order with his frame and his speed and all that. And when you see that finish for Giannis, it's kind of a sneak peek in the future, in my opinion, because when he's utilized right and when he's engaged like he was against those two teams in LA and Milwaukee, if he can maintain that over an 82-game stretch, you can run consistently some pick and roll action with him and Booker. I mean, that two-way dynamic with those two guys playing on and off each other is going to be, like we said during the pre-draft process, Brennan, at its peak, pretty unstoppable.
It is, and you're seeing it already, and it's people putting the ball on the ground a little bit more on the short roll and busting out the spin move and all that that we've seen from him here and there, but it's definitely kind of coming together, especially in the pick and roll lately. So that's exciting, and it's going to be one of the biggest factors to those two having that chemistry and success together. Putting those two in actions together more consistently has to happen. I think that's one of the big things you want to see with Johnson being more integrated here over the last 15 or so games is, can we put Ayton and Booker in a position where both of their gravity and both of their skill can really shine through? And that pick and roll was a great example of it. Last thing I have on Ayton as we close here is biggest or highest net rating for any of these guys we've talked about. So plus 11.6 over this five-game stretch per 100 possessions. That's huge. And he's been one of the better on-off guys all year, even with his struggles. So to see that carry over when the wins come has been awesome.
It really kind of speaks to, even though Booker had his monster scoring night, kind of for this whole rebuild to work, Brennan, and for them to really reach a championship upside, especially with the five-game stretch here, you said with the net rating, DeAndre Ayton's going to have to make some huge stretch in him being a star quality big man for this rebuild to work. And this kind of is a sneak peek, in my opinion, of this 4-1 stretch against two high quality teams over that stretch as well in New Orleans and, or excuse me, not New Orleans, but Milwaukee and Los Angeles with LeBron, Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's just kind of a really exciting little bit here and kind of a nice way to close things because I think Ayton could really turn to a stud here in a couple of years if all goes well with his development.
Yeah, Luka had a 31-11-6 yesterday. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, this rookie class is
I'm just kidding. But I agree with you. He's been way better than I think. Do you think he's been better than you expected? Like at this point in the year, would you have thought we would have seen the Milwaukee game, the Lakers game, the Magic game, the Washington game, all the peaks he's had, the Denver home game where he scored 24? I feel like on the whole, he's been just way better than I expected. Do you agree?
I agree. And it's like, I don't want to compare it too much to Anthony Davis' rookie season, but after hearing Shamit come on our podcast of Bourbon Street Shots and pretty much tell us all about Anthony Davis and how similar it was to DeAndre Ayton, I mean, if he has another few months of development, Brennan, I think there could be some huge strides made by him in year two.
For sure. I agree.
All righty. Anything else you want to cover as far as today's podcast goes?
No, we'll be back tomorrow to talk to host of Locked On Pacers to continue that series we did with Schmidt and compare Mikal Bridges' rookie season to what Paul George did early in his career and see if there's any parallels there.
Yeah, that will be a really fun, exciting series we're going to be continuing throughout this. Devin Booker will be the week after that, so look forward to that one as well. But until then, guys, we'll talk to you tomorrow with Tony East.